This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Okay, Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSiN, the sports betting network. We welcome you back. Dustin Sweetelson live in Las Vegas. I'm Patrick Maher live from Los Angeles. Hope you're having a good week. Friday, June 28. Of course, yesterday we finished up the NBA draft. To discuss the draft in the NBA, Eric Pincus joins us, Bleacher Report national NBA writer. You can find him on Twitter at Eric Pincus. And we battled, we got the setup, and you look great. Progressive Guest Line brings you Eric. Hi, nice to see you.
I appreciate it. I didn't have time to shave. The draft was kind of crazy. Other than that, I think we're good to go.
Well, you mentioned the draft. So much of the conversation is about Bronny James being drafted. But let's talk about the Lakers, an overview. Was it stunning at 17 that Connect was there? Do you believe it was stunning for them? Because that's the perfect fit.
Oh, for them, yeah. Yeah, absolutely stunning. I mean, is it absolutely the shockingest thing ever? No, I mean, the guy is 23. And the way the draft tends to work is that teams want that upside of a player that is 19, 18, 20, where they feel like at that level of the draft, if they put in a good 1-2 years, they're going to get a very special player. Connect is who he is already, and that's a really nice potential NBA player. If he is exactly who he's already, you're set, and he could be a rotation player for the next 5, 8, however many years, as long as he stays healthy, continues to work hard, and adapts to the NBA game, which, you know, is always a risk. So I think they were thrilled. He was probably, I don't know, top 5, top 7 on their board. So to get that player at 17 for them is a, you know, absolutely for them, it's a stunning win.
Eric, the Lakers themselves, help us understand, because we talk from a betting market and the West is so deep. But if you project to next year, can you think of some flexibility, how they can revamp the roster? Like, give me an overview on the Lakers going into this offseason.
Right. Well, there's a big question. Does LeBron come back, right? Because he can opt out of his contract. He can opt in and extend. He could opt out and resign, or he could leave. And that they drafted his son and hired his podcast partner kind of suggests that LeBron's sticking around. You know what I mean? It's like, I wouldn't worry about that from that point of view. But assuming he comes back for the max. Now, if he comes back for less, that's on LeBron. He can give the team a little more flexibility. But let's just pencil in about 50-ish million. You're paying AD a ton. Now you have another question. Does D'Angelo Russell opt in? And that decision comes by the 29th, by the midday in Los Angeles where I'm at. At some point, I'm going to find out. We'll all know whether D'Angelo Russell opted in or out. If he opts in, that's about 18, 19 million in that range. That's on their books, and they can either trade it or keep him. If they keep him and they or if they trade it, they don't really have a lot of money to spend. That's the main thing. There's no like, oh, we have 13-ish million, unless LeBron takes less. If D'Angelo leaves, they can replace him with a 13-ish million dollar player, probably be able to keep Max Christie or Taurean Prince. Sounds like they would lean towards Christie of the two. And so you're saying, is a $13 million player in this free agent market better than D'Angelo Russell? That's a debatable thing. There aren't a lot of, it's not a deep free agent market. That said, if you could trade D'Angelo because he opts in and you combine another player, maybe Jared Vanderbilt or someone else, they have two picks because they're going to keep Connect. So they have 29 and 31 way down the road, probably long after LeBron is retired. So it's a risk from the Lakers' point of view. But you know, just last year, they were in the Western Conference Finals from where they sit. The one team they can't beat has been the Nuggets, and they feel like they could have beat anyone else. Not saying they could, but from their point of view. So if they can improve enough, and if the Nuggets get weak enough, this is a team that thinks they could get back to the Conference Finals and further.
Do you think they want D'Lo to opt in?
I guess the answer to that, because I'm, you know, I can only go by what I hear, and they're not going to tell me their trade conversations. You know what I mean? Like, most of these conversations have already taken place. It's not like July 1st hits or July 5th or 6th after the moratorium where they can get executed, where it's like a new idea. Usually it's months or weeks, maybe even days worth of conversation that have already happened, right? So they may know, like, okay, we have a real shot. Let's just say we'll throw out DeJounte Murray. Let's say the Hawks are like, we're going to trade one of our two guards. And let's say that they can't find a market for the higher price Trae Young. They decide, okay, we got to move one of them. That's, I'm not saying it happens, but let's say they do. Now the Lakers have a lot of basically are most of the way there in that trade, in that theoretical trade, not a real trade, that they can get DeJounte Murray because you have about $19 million. Now you have to include another player. There are all these aprons. There are two different basically spending limits depending on how you go about your business. I will say that the one thing that Rob Pelinka, the GM of the team, has said over and over and over again, like a mantra, is that trades are hard. And while I agree, we're seeing a lot of trades around the league, right? So yes, they are hard. But I think D'Angelo helps them make a trade. But at the same time, if he opts out, maybe they have a player in free agency that they think is worth 13 or 12 or whatever that will sufficiently help them. And they have other means or other ways to replace what D'Angelo does and doesn't do.
Eric Pincus, Bleacher Report. So great segue by you with DeJounte Murray. Let's talk about the Hawks. First off, Richesse. I don't even, the way people are talking about him, I don't even know if he's a real human. Like, I haven't heard anybody say anything positive about the player, but it's a fascinating pick because so much has yet to be decided. Like, where will Trae Young play next? Right now over at DraftKings, the Hawks are minus 200, so your favorite. And then the Spurs are 3.5 to 1, your second betting favorite. And the Lakers are 5.5 to 1, your third betting favorite. And then there's the DeJounte Murray piece. I'm just going to throw all that at you, and you tell me what you think of the Hawks, but start with Richesse.
Well, I mean, you know, I'm mostly right, so I don't have to say the names and butcher them. So I'm always impressed when, you know, someone says the name way better than I can. But he's a nice prospect. He has potential as a big wing, connector, defender, do a bit of everything. He's got a long way to go to be what number one pick is. He's not coming in like Victor Wembanyama, where, I mean, even Wembanyama the first month, he was good. He was very good, but he wasn't like elite. It took him about a month to figure stuff out. Well, this kid's going to need probably a year, you know, like a normal prospect, a normal kid coming into the NBA that needs to grow into his body, grow into that experience. And I like the pick. You could argue Sarr, you could argue any of the, you know, there's a lot of good players. No one in this draft is like, this is the guy you build your team around as the top guy. And that's okay. It kind of sucks that the Hawks never get a number one pick and they finally do in the draft where there's no clear number one, but they made the best of the pick. As far as the bigger picture questions, you know, they have some financial issues. They got out of AJ Griffin to start to reduce that tax bill. So we have different levels. You have tax, which is just cost the ownership money. Doesn't make anything difficult for the team, for the GM to build the team. It's just money. That matters for a lot of teams. Some teams, they won't cross that line, period. However, if you're above that line, you can do some stuff, but you start to reach these aprons, and that's where the Hawks have been. They're at that first, even near the second. If they want to keep, you know, certain players, they're stuck. If they want to add, they're stuck. So they have to reduce to add. And so now you look at their team and you say, well, they're just not great. I mean, they're perfectly adequate. They're a bad team, but they're not a bad enough team. You know, you don't want to be mediocre bad. You want to be terrible. I mean, I know it was miserable for the Pistons fans, but like, that's better than what it was, to be just stuck in the middle. And that's what the Hawks have been. They're overspending on their roster, stuck in the middle, just not good enough. And so maybe given that you have so much money into two guys who play the same position, it's time to break that up. Problem is that Trey's value is iffy because his contract is high and he's a very specific type of player, of which a lot of teams already have a star point guard. But he's, you know, he's slight in terms of build, doesn't defend, doesn't do much off the ball. Has a personality where not everyone is, you know, loves playing with him. Although, you know, sometimes that's overstated. DeJounte, everyone loves. Nothing, no one, never hear anything negative about DeJounte. He's not maybe as big a star, but he's a better two-way player. So I think if they do really look to move one of those two, DeJounte is probably the easier one to move. I think there would be a bigger audience, but he's also probably the guy they'd rather keep. So we'll have to wait and see what the Hawks pull together.
The Trae Young conversation is fascinating, and so is DeJounte. Is that untenable, the two of them together? Is that being overblown in the media?
No, I would say, like, last year they got a get-out-of-jail-free card from the Jazz. The Jazz were great. They took, from the Hawks' perspective, they took John Collins for nothing, and they just took him off their books, solved all their problems in the short term in terms of money, right? Well, maybe they can find another someone to take Clint Capella. Maybe they find someone to take Hunter. Hunter's a good player, you know, gets hurt a lot, but, you know, solid player. Maybe there's a way out with some of their more expensive guys as they sort of shift to a younger group of players, you know, Jalen Johnson, Ricochet. I think I got it. I was pretty dang close.
You nailed it.
And all right. And go in different directions. So, you know, I think they need to make this change. Do they need to make it right now? No, they can do it at the deadline. If they find a trade for Capella, it kind of reduces some of that financial pressure. So buying time is sometimes a good thing, but also getting closure and getting together what they're going to be the next few years is probably better.
Hey, Eric, I have a question for you, and you're more than welcome to say no. Can you do one more segment? Because I have to ask you about Paul George. I have to ask you about Brandon Ingram. I have plenty more to ask going into the offseason. Can you do one more segment with
us? Yeah, of course. Happy to do it.
Okay, great. Thank you very much. I appreciate it. I put you on the spot, but come on. It's Friday in June, and we're talking basketball. It's nothing better than that. Of course, Eric Pincus, you can find him over at Bleacher Report, national NBA writer, at Eric Pincus, P-I-N-C-U-S, on Twitter. Make sure to give him a follow. Got plenty more to do. Where's Brandon Ingram going to play? He did mention the Pistons, and I will say, I am a Detroit Piston fan, so I have questions about the Pistons and what they're going to do. And Paul George, who's probably the big name as far as free agency right now, he could opt in, I believe, with the Clippers. We'll get that answer coming back with Eric Pincus. We continue. Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network.
Okay, $199, you get a month for free, generally $240. Sign up, become a VSiN Pro. Remember, we dropped the NFL betting guide yesterday. You have to be a pro to get it. You get the picks, the splits, everything we offer. VSiN.com/subscribe to unlock the deal. Use the promo code SHARP. Sharp Money right here, DraftKings, VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. Dustin Sweetelson, I'm Patrick Maher. So here's the deal. Eric Pincus, of course, national NBA writer for Bleacher Report. He literally did have plans that he had to cancel to stick around for another segment. So I put him in a bad spot, but he's a good dude. And we get 10 more minutes with him. Paul George, Progressive Guest Line, brings you Eric. So it's fascinating, right? Because obviously he's linked, and I'll give you the odds right now, Eric. So he's a minus 200, so he's a $2 favorite to stay with the Clippers, and the 76ers are 3.5 to 1. The Warriors are 4 to 1. What do you think happens with George?
So the conversation has been for almost a year that he and the Clippers would resolve it. Everyone was like, yeah, they'll figure it out. They need each other. They have a new building. The Clippers do in Inglewood. They don't really have the means to add anyone else, et cetera, et cetera. And, you know, they extended Kawhi. We figured George was next. I think George's people expected that. And yet here we are. We're on the verge of free agency. They could already negotiate. Like, it's legal now. Not that they wouldn't negotiate in previous years at this time of the year, but like legally they can come to an agreement. They haven't. So something is wrong. Something in, you know, with the new rules, with all these aprons and penalties, the Clippers are clearly looking at financial restraint and figuring out like, hey, like, I don't know. I went to all the Clipper games, not all of them, but a lot of them last year. And like, you know, a third of them, Paul George was like brilliant, but a third, his legs were totally dead. And the other remaining third, it was a mixed bag. Like, he's really a good player, but there's an age factor, right? And durability. So if he opts in, they can trade him, similar to we talked last segment about D'Angelo Russell. But he's almost $50 million, $49 million. So call it $50 million contract, which is difficult to move. And so, yeah, he could go easily, just sign with the Sixers. But Paul is, he's an L.A. adjacent guy from the surrounding metropolitan area. And so he would rather be here, but he would also like to get paid. So do the Sixers give him everything he wants? Does he move to Philadelphia, play with Embiid and Maxey? I still think that's on the table, but I think his priority is to stay here, but he's also got to get paid. This probably is his last big contract. unless he opts in, and then maybe you get traded to the Warriors and they have Chris Paul, they have Andrew Wiggins. Now, these rules are very complex, but it is doable. It probably requires a third team to get involved somehow, which is not that hard. You have to throw some draft comp or maybe a young player, somehow find a way. Maybe it's the Warriors trading a Moses Moody or something, or I don't know about Kuminga, but you know, somebody that they're ready to move on from. And that gets this thing to happen. Not to the Clippers per se. I don't know the answers because none of us do, but I think these are the three main teams. Warriors, still, you want to give Steph for his final run. If it's the last 2 years, I mean, who knows, maybe stays longer, but you want to give him something. And it feels like they're moving on from Clay, and it seems like Clay has a big market. So maybe this is their pivot. Go and get Paul George.
Nope. It's a great answer. So Brandon Ingram fascinates me, Eric, because when we're watching the postseason last year, it was very clear when the ball went through Zion, they were a better team. And Ingram's a tremendous offensive player, but the ball stopped. It just stopped moving, right? So I don't know if those two can coexist. He is minus 110, so favorite to return to the Pelicans. 76ers, 4.5-1. The Rockets, 6-1. What's your take on Ingram and the Pelicans?
Well, the Pelicans have some money issues, and they're different from other teams' money issues. Like we talk about the Clippers and the Warriors, they can spend and then there are penalties and they may or may not go there. The Pelicans just don't pay the tax, like historically. So they're kind of using an internal lower level. Now, maybe they go into the tax. They're certainly welcome to, but they haven't. So I can't base my analysis on the supposition that they're going to suddenly be a tax team. And if they're managing their money and you're paying Zion next year, so we're not even talking this season, we're talking the season after. You're paying Ingram a new contract, you're paying Zion, you're paying CJ McCollum, and at some point next year, not this season, the one after, Trey Murphy's money kicks in, which he hasn't been paid yet, but if they give him a nice deal, now their money, they're going to be committing more and more into these heavy taxes, and I just don't know if that's who the team is. So something has to give, and it feels like, as you mentioned, like it's hard to run through Brandon Ingram unless he's got the ball as your best player. And I think when Zion was hurt in previous years, it worked. When they make Ingram the main guy and they build around him, it can work. But their upside is much greater with Zion being that guy. Now, Zion also gets hurt a lot, so that's a whole nother issue. So now you say, well, instead of paying Ingram, trade him to a team that will pay Ingram. And that's where you get a team like the Sixers, and just like they can just pay Paul George. Maybe they want a younger guy. Now, Ingram isn't a great three-point shooter, and he scores a lot in the mid-range, and you'd have to, does that work with Joel Embiid, who is a big man? Does that clog the space? How do you make that work? But Nick Nurse is the kind of coach who would throw anything out there and make it work, find a way to scheme it. He's very creative. He's not rigid as a coach. He's willing to do whatever it takes to maximize who he has, and I respect that. So I could see that, and he's certainly younger. You're going to get more mileage out of Brandon Ingram. It's just, is he the right fit as a, he's not a non-shooter, but it's really not his specialty. He's more of a shooter than DeMar DeRozan, but he's not necessarily like a lockdown catch shoot guy. He needs that ball in his hands.
Klay Thompson, Eric, is fascinating because with sports, you don't want to let sentiment get involved, but I mean, it's Klay Thompson, it's Golden State, it's Steph, it's Draymond. The playoffs weren't great optically. What's the situation with Klay, and what do you think ends up happening?
So Lakeham, who owns the team, at some point did an interview, and I'm sorry, I forget who he did it with, but he basically said plan A is to get under the tax, similar to what we just said about the Pelicans, like really reduce their salary, get back to a norm. The NBA has really shifted in the rules to try to restrict the Clippers and the Warriors and the Suns and all these teams that are just spend to try to have some level of parity. And we could debate whether that's right or wrong. It's fact. This is what we face. And so the Warriors have to decide, do we lean in to these new rules and let Klay go and maybe get out of Wiggins and Chris into Paul George, but keep our money low. And that's our team, Paul and Draymond and Steph and Podziemski, maybe keep Kuminga, the younger guys, and figure it out. Up to them. Whereas they could just say, all right, we're just going to ride that sentiment, ride the wave of who we've been, and give Steph his Splash Brothers until 25-26 is over. So this year and next year, pay whatever consequence that might be. But then Klay has these suitors, right? There's people with money. There's Orlando. They're desperate for shooting. And a name like Klay for Orlando means a lot. At least that's my understanding. You know, like they're kind of the Clippers to the Lakers or the Nets to the Knicks, where everyone loves the Heat in Florida. And they also have the Magic. And the Magic fans who love them are diehard. But it's really a Miami State. So they would love to get a name like Klay. Yeah, he's past his prime and all that. But his bad season, quote, bad season this year, was still shooting the three at the league average. Like, his bad is average. So if they can get him healthy, give him a role where they're not as reliant on him as the Warriors were, you might be able to get the most out of him for a couple of years and help their playoff push. So I think it's realistic. Or, you know, even Philly, if they don't get who they need in their top choices, adding a shooter, and if you can get Klay at 20 something and then add another 20 something guy, maybe that's the solution. So I still think Warriors is a possibility, but I also think there's a real path where if I lean towards the end of the Splash Brothers era.
Interesting. Okay, Eric, thank you for sticking around. Eric Pincus, Bleacher Report, national NBA writer, at Eric Pincus on Twitter. It did a great job. Now go get to your other obligations. We appreciate you.
All right, anytime. Thanks for having me.
Okay, thank you, buddy. Appreciate it. Yeah, that is fascinating because, like, the legacy thing, there will be a statue of Steph, Klay, and Draymond there at the new arena eventually. They will be commemorated, big guy. Klay, it's just like, you know, if Paul George is in the mix, do you let sentiment get involved? Because at this point, you know, seemingly George is the better player. Orlando makes too much sense because they literally just need a shooter, a veteran shooter.
Okay. I get that. For Golden State, unfortunately, I think you do have to move on. I think what you feel like you have to pay him to keep him for everything he's done, it just doesn't compute to wins. I think the Paul George piece is fascinating for them because you go over to DraftKings, they're 30-1 to win the title. And you mean to tell me they can't make one last push with the way Kuminga came on last year, with the way they've proven to develop guys? 30-1? 30-1 on Steph Curry?
Come on, big
After
guy.
He got to rest a little bit longer without being deep in the postseason, that number jumps out to me.
Hey, you know what I forgot to do? I forgot to bet the over with the Reds and Cardinals yesterday, and they scored like 100 runs.
Yeah.
So what we're going to do is attack that 15-game slate in Major League Baseball next.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, VSIN.com. You get your best betting splits, exclusive articles, odds by your state, betting tools, and betting guides. It's all there, including the all-new NFL betting guide. You have to go to VSIN.com to check that out. Okay, Sharp Money, DraftKings, VSIN, the sports betting network, as we welcome you back. Dustin Sweetelson, downtown Las Vegas at the D. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles on a Friday, June 28. We got plenty to do on the program. We're going to dive into the Major League Baseball slate for today. Just quickly, so you all know, I did challenge the big guy during the break. He's going on an extended break. Of course, Dustin is in July. So he's going to be gone for 3 weeks. So I challenged him. I said, 3 weeks social media detox. No Twitter for 3 weeks when you're hanging out with your family and friends. And you know what he said? I can't do that.
I got a lot of vices, man. And you're asking me to get rid of like another one? It's like, at what point do I just then have to become a different person?
Well, what vice have you given up?
Not many that I can speak about on the air, but there's plenty of them.
Oh, okay.
General happiness. General happiness would be the vice that I'm giving up on for the most part across the board. Having to be disciplined. Like that, like not being able to just be an absolute mess all the time. That's what I'm giving up on. So like the social media thing of the issues, it's like it's like telling me to give up Diet Coke, Patrick. That's what it is. It's not the worst thing for me. And it's a watered down version of the other stuff that messes with my brain. But if I have it, it might keep me honest from doing the other things that I'm addicted to. You know,
yeah, I don't know. I don't think you know how bad it is for you. I think you just glossing it over like it's not that bad. Maybe you could use me as inspiration. 4 days ago, I just decided cold turkey, no more nicotine, and here I am.
But okay,
you
then
can do it.
Then
you, if how, I can do that, you can do it.
Then how am I going to know what's happening in the world?
Well, just like they did back in the day. It just naturally happens.
I'm going to wait for the television networks to pick up on the news like 3 hours later?
I'm for 4 weeks, I'm not touching Twitter. So it can be done.
Yeah, but you're not addicted to it. You don't even like it.
Why would you? It's just people clowning.
I don't understand. It's like... You giving up Twitter and me giving up Twitter are like two totally different things.
Me giving up Zen was wild.
Okay, that was tough. I'll be fair. That's tough, and there's a chemical thing going on there.
Yeah, trust me. I know. All right. Well, your phone was blowing up. You may want to look because obviously addicted.
No.
I will say this. Berhalter and the U.S. men's national team. I mean,
woof.
Are you freaking kidding me in Copa America? So they lost to Panama yesterday, 2-1. Now, Timothy Weah, he got a red card for slapping a Panamanian person in the head. And so to think that you weren't going to get a red for that is just unacceptable. But here's the thing. And again, it was 1-1. In my estimation, if you're the United States, even down a guy, you still have to beat Panama. It's 11-10 Panama. No, you have to win that game. All right, let's just say you were on a red, you lose, Weah apologizes. But this comes back to one person and one person in particular, and that's Greg Berhalter. It's the U.S. men's national team in a time with men's soccer, U.S. men's soccer, because women's has been dominant, that talent-wise, I'm not saying production, talent-wise, I don't know if we've ever had more of a talent-rich crop of young players. It's not just Pulisic. It's not just McKenzie. It's not just Weah. I mean, you can go on. It's not Reyna. You can go on and on. What's fascinating is like the politics that's involved with the U.S. men's national team when it comes to soccer. Berhalter was let go essentially after the World Cup because he had run-ins with Reyna's parents. And then they're searching. They had an interim head coach searching for a new head coach. Search Germany and Europe and South America. Going to great lengths to find somebody to lead the U.S. men's national team in a golden age of talent for the team. And they go back to Greg Berhalter. Nobody. I mean, literally nobody wanted that. And they did. And the continued just... The only way I can put it is just failing to live up to expectations and underperforming. The continuing underperformance under Berhalter is shockingly disgusting. And the idea of, we have to have the players have to step up as well. Yeah, there has to be a structure. There has to be a belief. There has to be a consistent message. And obviously right now, they're not getting that from Berhalter. It's time to stop. I was about to say bad word around. It's about to stop that around. And decide, as a country, you want to take this seriously like our women do? Or do you want to just continue to be a laughingstock on a global stage like you are?
Okay, I have a question because I don't follow this like you. All I've heard about the U.S. men's national team for, I don't know, 2 decades now? And maybe it's 15 years. Jurgen Klinsmann, right? That was the coach at one point.
A donk.
Everyone couldn't stop blaming him for everything. Also, he wasn't even American. Weird move. Bruce Arena, people couldn't stop just calling that dude a donk year after year. And now you have an issue with this Berhalter guy? Like, I don't know. Why is it different that he stinks when all of his predecessors also have stunk?
Klinsmann's a German. He did well in 06 with the Germany squad. He doesn't stink. There was just a cultural difference. It's not weird for managers from different countries to coach different. Like, it's not odd for a German to coach the U.S. men's national team. I just want to make that very clear. It's not odd for somebody from, I wouldn't even know, but somebody from France to coach, in Brazil. So, again, it's...
It's not, like we have American. I guess we have American basketball coaches who will coach on other countries for the Olympics and their national teams.
Yeah. So just to, I mean, you ask a good question. Arena's a legend, but he's a strong-headed personality that gets involved in a lot of drama off the pitch. But he is a U.S. men's national team and a soccer legend in the United States. I don't have a great answer as to why they haven't been able to find a successful manager. The thought was they were going to replace Berhalter with the gentleman that's now coaching the U.S., the Canadian national team. And for some reason, his name slips my mind, but I told you it's like that TV show that you love so much.
Jesse Marsh.
Jesse Marsh, who was there at Leeds. So Jesse Marsh was managing in the Premier League in England, which is the Premier League in the world. So he obviously has chops. Now, was it a great run at Leeds? No. But he also coached in the Bundesliga, which is the number one German league. So he has chops. So Jesse Marsh would have been a better choice just to mix it up than Berhalter right now. Anyway.
But
I hope I didn't confuse
it. But then the team being better, having better development over recent years, maybe still not where they need to be compared to the rest of the world, that's why you have an issue with this Berhalter guy, is because he's not capitalizing and maximizing that they actually might be good?
It's like you hear about parents. We constantly are hearing about, you know, parents getting involved in Little League and making it awkward for coaches. Well, in the soccer sphere, Gio Reyna's dad
runs it.
Was one of the great U.S. players of all time, and he was a teammate of Berhalter back in the day. Well, apparently it got messy with Berhalter, Reyna's family not playing their son during this past World Cup when their son is obviously somebody worthy of playing. That drama got involved, and I just think there's a lot bubbling underneath the surface with extra stuff that Berhalter, we need him out of there, even if he's a great tactician, because the drama is just too heavy at this point.
The team's not going to respond to him anymore. It's over. Okay, that makes sense.
It's too salacious of a situation.
That makes sense.
Speaking of salaciousness, and we'll come back with three up, three down in the baseball. I apologize for stepping all over it. The Clippers are not, and this is not a surprise, the Clippers are not offering Paul George a max contract. That doesn't mean the Clippers don't want Paul George. Paul George is 35 years old, people. Hasn't ever won a thing. Was in his prime when he's with OKC and lost to Utah. Like, of course. Now, he's going to get the max. If he decides to leave, he'll get the max from Philly. But this concept, like the idea that the Clippers are trying to be, because they got to deal with Harden yet. And by the way, Kawhi took a discount. So this is essentially saying, if Kawhi's going to do it, Paul, we're going to offer you less. Do you care about the team, or do you care about maximizing a contract?
Tell me, this just popped in my head. Is Paul George the Dak Prescott of the NBA? Like,
he was such a great two-way player with size when he came into the league, but nothing. He's never won anything.
The substance just isn't there. Like, in a vacuum, you'll look at the numbers, you'll look at the stats, you can look at the matchups and what they can do. You'll go, that guy is really, really good. Is he the best? Is he top five? No, but like really good, really solid. But also the question is, why can't they consistently win and win the big one?
Because you get tantalized by the skill set.
Yes.
But you nailed it. The results have never been there for 15 years. They'd be crazy to give them the max. Baseball next, sharp money.
This is Sharp Money with Patrick Maher on VSIN, the sports betting network.
Okay, with our all-new NFL betting guide, let's make this NFL season your best ever with our all-new VSiN NFL betting guide. The guide is packed with everything you need to bet the NFL smarter, including in-depth previews of all 32 teams with win total projections for every team. Very important. New quarterback and head coaching breakdowns. Super Bowl predictions, a prop betting guide, very important, plus our best future bets from VSiN experts, including MVP, Rookie of the Year, and Coach of the Year awards. Whether you're a seasoned better or just getting started, our NFL betting guide is your ticket to smarter, more informed bets. Visit VSiN.com/guide to get your copy. That's VSIN.com/guide. Whoever wrote that one, that one's very well written and very important. VSiN.com/guide. We are the response to the guide. I guess this would be my fifth guide. I've never seen a response like this. So I encourage you to get there. And if you want to get the guide, we can give you a discount. You get an extra month, $199, but use the promo code SHARP. And I'll take care of you. All right? Don't worry about it. The big guy, Dustin Sweetelson, of course. I'm Patrick Maher, live from Los Angeles. The big guy doing a little flexing during the break as we get into the baseball. He's flying out tonight. He's taking off July. But he's flying out tonight, so he's going to be at the airport. He's going to be at the airport, and he was flexing during the break. I'm going to have an airport beer.
No. That's a lie. I didn't say that. I said I'm going to have airport beers, plural, because I'm flying on the red eye, and I want to pass out on this flight.
So that was just your way of begging me to ask you to rank your top five beers.
Oh, well, I know one beer that's not going to be in the mix that everyone talks about is the shower beer. I think a shower beer is a psychotic thing to be doing. In the hot, humid, gross, disgusting shower, having an airport beer is shower beer is insane. I would go airport beer is number one. I'd say
because it just hits different.
Well, there's just no responsibilities on the other end. I don't have to drive. I'm getting picked up at the airport either by an Uber or family member, right? And then there's the opportunity just to be out cold during the flight. So that would be number one. Number two, outdoor beer. Let's say like on a patio. I just enjoy drinking a beer outside. I'd say the beach.
Patio beer. Patio beer. Yeah, better patio than outside. Beer.
Yeah.
Yeah, patio.
The number three beer would be a beach beer. The problem is a lot of the best beaches in the country don't let you bring beers onto the actual beach. Very few do. That's why it's not higher than three. Panama City.
It's low key, though, because they say you can't hear and everybody just
does. Everyone does it. Okay. Number four would be the ball game beer. Any type of game, sporting event. Have a beer, wow. Have 12.
That's low on the list. A ballpark beer has to be near the top for me. But
yeah,
it's your list. I apologize.
I'm a bit of a nerd when I go to games where, especially with the price of tickets today, I don't want something that prevents me from remembering every detail that I paid to watch. So if I have too many of those beers, they're also pretty pricey in their own right. All of a sudden, I don't remember what I paid for, so it seems like
no,
a giant
you're making
waste
that
of time.
Up. But that's cool. The four is fine. Number five.
And then number five beer. The breakfast beer. When you want to go off the rails, right? When you're trying to make a statement for how your day's gonna go, it's the beer with breakfast.
All right. Good job. All right. Well, enjoy your airport. I can't say airport.
Airport. Yeah. What's that about?
I don't know. I'm an idiot. Time for three up, three down. We're going to get to our plays coming up in just a bit. We have our family vids as well. I do want to apologize to you because you generally give me, when I ask you for a specific play, if we're being completely honest as friends, you generally give me losers.
Yeah.
And then yesterday you said, look, 7.5 Cards, Reds, over, lock. And I was going to play it. I just completely spaced on it. And I think the Reds themselves scored 11
runs. Yeah,
runs.
But that's why. That's why it cashed, because you didn't actually
play it. Because I didn't play it.
I'd also point out that our unit sizes are very different. Whoa. And that's why sometimes I may overthink the bets that I give you, because you don't like to just play around, whereas I tend to be a little bit more reserved in how much I'm throwing at these games, because I bet more volume, and you just slam one single game.
Yeah. Just like to get the juices flowing. You understand what I'm saying?
Units.
Okay. First, where are we starting? Up?
Well, we're going to go three up first. And there is a great matchup. And I did not anticipate this being a great matchup. But we've got the Mets hosting the Astros for a three-game set this weekend. The two best teams in the month of June. Astros enter 15-7 this month. The Mets are 15-6 as a battle for the best record in June. And they will be throwing Jose Quintana versus our first three up, Ronel Blanco. Blanco, hey. After throwing a no-hitter, he has not eased up at all. He has been awesome for the Houston Astros, who've been absolutely decimated by pitcher injuries this season. Over the last month, Blanco, 30 and a third innings pitched. A 2.97 ERA, 28 punch outs, 3 quality starts, and a .89 whip. He's also been really good on the road, an ERA under 2 this season. I think the Astros would be the play here against my Mets, just because I think Blanco is much better than Quintana, and Ronel Blanco has stepped up when this team's needed him the most.
Good ones. Good start with Blanco. Can I mix in my favorite beers, or do you not care?
No. Well, how about close tabs?
Well, just quickly, we're going to continue the baseball. Quickly, growing up where I grew up, a lot of times you just sit in the garage, but I'll give you a caveat. Garage beer when it's raining outside the garage.
That is very
garage
specific.
Garage is up, sitting there in a chair, raining. Perfect beer. Go ahead. Who's next on up?
That is the white trashiest beer anyone's ever listed.
Well, that's what I am, literally.
All right, the next one, Seattle.
So is my family.
How is Seattle in first place? They have dominant pitching, and they're throwing Logan Gilbert, one of their aces, on the hill today. He has been awesome this month. 35 and two-thirds innings pitched, a 2.02 ERA, 33 Ks, 4 quality starts in that span, a .76 whip. He's been awesome. They've got Kirby. They've got Castillo. They've got arms coming out of everywhere. And tonight, the Seattle Mariners, they are taking on – who did I have them taking on? The Twins, Bailey Ober, who just threw a complete game against the Oakland Athletics his last time out. The total is set at 7. My lean would be the under, because I think both of these offenses will have a hard time squaring up the ball against these two pitchers.
Okay, under – with the Mariners and Twins tonight. Next on my list, bonfire beer. Chilly outside, maybe the fall. Dude, you hating on somebody saying bonfire beer is just such more proof that you just make things up as you go and don't have any conviction in yourself as a human being. That's why when Dave Ross calls, you'll just do a spot.
Bonfire.
When you are literally such a beta, it's unbelievable. And the idea that you scoffed at me saying bonfire beer, I know for a fact you think it's a great beer. You're just being an ass.
No, I don't like bonfires.
Don't like bonfires. Lying.
You're a hippie.
Literally a lie.
You're such a hippie. You're just such a hippie. Hey,
a hippie?
Someone playing acoustic guitar. No.
I didn't say drum circle. I said a bunch of wood and fire. Nothing is less hippie than wood and fire.
No, I think there's a lot of things less hippie than wood and fire. And then you smell like the fire after. You got to wash your clothes.
You don't like smell. Okay. Now, okay. Well, I know you got to get to Austin Riley. Now you're saying you don't like the next morning smelling a bonfire on your clothes? Dustin, I hope everybody listening that hates me and loves you, I hope you realize it just did a 180. You're saying the dumbest stuff that's ever been said.
No. No, I actually respect the garage in the rain answer more than I respect the bonfire.
So just to make it clear, you're not being a contrarian. You literally don't like bonfires.
What's to like? It's outside. I'm an indoor human. It is cold, hence the need for fire. Why not go indoors? You pay a lot of money for rent. Go back in your home where it's warmer.
You just brought up paying rent to justify not liking bonfires. That's so idiotic. You need a vacation.
I'm not an extended one. I'm not a big nature guy. I'm just not a big nature guy. I don't know what to tell you.
All right. You want to sneak one in here? Go ahead.
Austin Riley. The Atlanta Braves offense coming alive without Acuna. Guys are stepping up. I don't think he can win the award, but he's 100-1 for MVP. And he's hitting .400 the last 2 weeks, 5 homers, 10 ribbies, a .1300 OPS. And Austin Riley's best months in his career, July and August. He does a lot of his power numbers in the month of July over the course of his career. There's a chance he carries this team, and maybe there's a narrative to be created that Austin Riley, if the numbers end up being good at the end, can be in the mix for the award.
Let Dustin know what you think about his take on bonfires at Dustin Sweetelson on Twitter, or you can email us sharpmoney@vsin.com. I'm serious. That's the worst take in the history of this program. Stuart Durst with props next.